This is truly an absolute honor for me on Steve Dale's Other World. I get to talk to a legend in Chicago theater. She is that. No, she is not. I'm wrong. She is a legend really across the country. Because what Jackie Taylor has done for the Black Ensemble Theater, for Chicago and Chicago's theater community as a whole, is just groundbreaking. And incidentally, for a whole lot of people, really, individuals whose lives have changed because of the woman sitting across from me. Also, and I apologize for this, Daryl Brooks, because I don't have that kind of introduction for you, but I'm sure you're important.
He's the backbone.
He is the backbone,
that's
I hear.
Right.
The backbone of the Black Ensemble Theater. So, Jackie, you are the founder, executive director, and CEO. So I think we begin here with a little history of what the Black Ensemble Theater is, how it began.
Well, the Black Ensemble Theater's mission is to eradicate racism. And I say that first because that's how it actually started. I'm an actress, and my first film was Cooley High in 1974,
sure,
when we began filming. And that propelled me into an arena of filmmaking that I found to be quite racist. Growing up in Chicago during that time, I was used to racism. I wasn't used
now
to
that's,
it.
I'm stopping you there, mm-hmm, and I apologize for interrupting. But that statement you just said,
yes,
should have never been acceptable, of course, that anyone could be accustomed to something like that. Let's say you're growing up in 2018, Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
How much better are we?
Well, we have come a long way, but we have a long way to come, as we can decipher from the political climate that we have in our country today. We're still fighting racism. We're still fighting bigotry.
I guess that's a whole different topic for a whole different show.
Yes, but and you need about 15, 20 people.
I'm sure. And a host who's African-American probably to better, you know. But I will tell you, it's just beyond my comprehension how in America we could even be talking about this in the 1970s, perhaps before I was born, let alone today. I really don't know, but I interrupted. So
well, that's okay.
I wanted to make a point of it, though.
Yeah, when you look at the history, in America, slavery existed for 465 years. Now, that number is important. 465 years, there were laws that dehumanized black human beings. And when you exist in that environment for that long and for those many generations, it takes a great deal of time to undo what psychologically and sociology, what has happened to people. So we still have a basis of racism that has systematically survived, whether we accept it, understand it, or even realize it.
So I'm doing some math in my head. It's kind of depressing. You're saying we have a few hundred years to go before things get better?
Well, they are getting better. But at the same time that they get better, as you can see, you can look at the Obama era and how difficult it was for that black man to be in the White House.
I would contend, I don't want to talk about politics here, but I would contend that politics were a part of the issue too. So it was that he was a Democrat and Republicans were on the other side. I think that was a part of it as well.
Yes, you can say that, Steve, if you so like.
Okay. I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
Now, let's get back to the theater
itself.
So you began the theater in what year again?
1976.
Mm-hmm.
1976, we started at 1429 North Wells Street. there was I wanted to do something about racism. I wanted to, instead of trying to navigate it, I wanted to eradicate it. And so that's why I set the mission of the theater, to eradicate racism. And at that time, I was looking for a theater and to put my black ensemble, because we were named after the Negro ensemble, except for my generation, of course, we were called black. And I was walking down the street and I said, God, I got to find a theater. I need a space. And I looked up and it said Theater for Rent. So I went in. And this guy, because, you know, at that time, I still looked like I was, I did in Cooley High. I wasn't 16 in Cooley High, but I looked like a little young girl. And he just laughed and said, "Ah, may I help you, young lady?" I said, "Yes, I want to rent your theater. I have a company. It's called the Black Ensemble Theater. And our mission is to eradicate racism." And he just smiled at me. He said, "Well, I'll tell you what, the theater is $750 a month, and then you have to pay for the lights, and the lights are $507 a month, and then you have to pay for the sound, and the sound is $200 and such a month, and then if you use the dressing rooms," and he did his little sheet of paper, and he said, "That comes to such and such and such and such." And I looked at his little sheet of paper, and I said, "Yeah, I'll give you $200 a month for everything. Take it or leave it. It's empty."
And
he took it.
I love that. That's a great story. So you were there for how many years?
We were there for about 3 years. Then we moved to
Beacon Street?
No, not then. Then we moved to Victory Gardens Theater. When they were on Clark Street.
Yes, I remember that.
They had a studio theater. Then we moved everywhere that I was an actress. That's where the Black Ensemble moved.
Coincidentally.
Right. Well, the directors like Dennis Zajac and Stuart Gordon, they were like, "You know, we want you to star in these productions, and we'll give you the little theater for your Black Ensemble." Okay.
And you're talking about, I mean, the names you just rattled off are legendary locally in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Little Black Ensemble, it isn't that anymore.
No. We now have our own building. It's the Black Ensemble Theater Cultural Center. We're actually 6 years old in our new building. And we had to have a sustainable product. We had to have a home. We had to have an asset where we could build a strong foundation so that the Black Ensemble Theater can continue way past Jackie Taylor, because it's going to take those many generations to eradicate racism. So it's not going to happen in my lifetime. It probably won't happen in my grandson's lifetime, but perhaps.
Really?
Well, yeah. I mean, if we look at it realistically and systematically and how much we have to tear down in order to build up, it's going to take a long time.
So, and both of you guys weigh in on this, and this has nothing directly to do with theater.
Mm-mm.
But in a way it kind of does, because it's what your theater's mission was. On a day-to-day basis, do you guys feel, both of you, do you feel racism?
Every day. Every day, all the time. Yes.
Hmm. You two?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think most people, I mean, I don't know. I'm not in your shoes or in your skin.
But
is that the case for everybody who isn't talking about it in some cases?
You look at, as Jackie said, the systemic racism that is here in this country and has been in forever. You go as far back as generational wealth. Generational wealth was built on the back of African-American slaves and African-Americans. So you have generations and generations of money that people have, and African-Americans are just coming into their own. Everybody always wants to talk about Oprah, she's a billionaire, or P. Diddy, and he's a billionaire. Yeah, but they're billionaires, but the majority of the wealth that is in this country is held by white men. And so that is a big part of systemic racism that That shows its head even at the Black Ensemble. I mean, we look at different funding and different things that other places get, and we just don't get that. But, I mean, I don't
really
know if that's too taboo to say on the radio, but it is.
I think you just did.
I just said it. There we go. But I said it, Jackie didn't, so there we go.
Raising money for theater has never been easy. It's theater. For local theater, Chicago or anywhere in the country, it's challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's more challenging because of what your mission is and that primarily, though not exclusively, the people you see on stage are African American in your various productions?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make it more difficult?
As you say, it's very challenging.
Maybe I should be asking
Daryl
this.
When you're black in America, everything is more difficult.
Hmm.
Period.
If you look at where we are now, the most educated, and this is a poll. I mean, not a poll. This is a fact. Some of the most educated people in America right now are African-American women, and they are also the most underpaid in the United States of America. How does that work? We're always told that you go to school, you get a good education, you get a great job and make lots of money. Right. Mm-hmm. African-American women are looked over. They're paid 68 cents on the dollar for African-American. For compared to white men, and 70 cents per dollar when it comes to white women. How is that? That's racism. Period.
Yes,
it's systemic.
It is.
It's built into the system and the fabric of the country. So when Ms. Taylor is talking about, or anybody is talking about, that it's going to take generations to get rid of systemic racism or racism, period. Unfortunately, that's just what it is. It did not start in a day. As Ms. Taylor said, it was 465 years. So now it's not going to all of a sudden in 30 years change completely. Now, as Ms. Taylor said, there have been advances, but we're still seeing a lot of firsts.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. This is 2018, and we're still talking about the first this and the first African American. We are the fabric of this country.
Mm-hmm.
We helped to build this country. We should have had our fair share many, many, many years ago. And until people realize, because many people will say that they are not racist. They will put their hand on a Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But many racists do not even realize that their attitudes are racist.
How do you change all that? Well, I know. Come to the Black Ensemble Theater and see your productions.
And education.
Well, that's part of your mission, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So you have a program for kids, I believe, or at least you...
We serve about 10,000 young people a year.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and the purpose is to help to break the systematic circle of racism. Because
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, from a very early age, you experience racism in the schools. I mean, look at Chicago. We're still talking about all black people live on the South Side. That's crazy. All black people live on the West Side. All the West Side is poor. All the South Side is poor. That's crazy, and that's systematic racism. First of all, black people live everywhere. Black people have all kind of economic incomes.
Mm-hmm.
But there are systematic laws in place. For instance, how the Board of Education, the taxes from your property determine how much money your school gets. Well, if you have a great deal of poverty in one place, that means that school gets basically nothing.
Yeah.
And the 40 schools that were closed, 89% of those schools were African American schools. I mean, how do you change this? You first of all have to change the trajectory in terms of making people aware of what's going on. Make them aware that it is still a very racist society today. And the proof is in the pudding. Look at the political climate.
That's a whole other topic, I suppose.
Okay, but if you look at that.
But do you feel every once in a while, so we move forward and forward and forward and forward. Now we're in 2014, 15, 16, and then 2016 hits, and now we're moving back a few steps.
Oh, we're moving back more than a few steps.
Really?
It's ridiculously crazy.
Have you ever, I've always wanted to ask you this, actually, and now
sure.
I've got you in the studio, I can do this.
Here I am.
And I'm going to get personal.
All right.
Uh-oh.
She's willing to take it.
I'll take. Throw it at me.
Why didn't you ever run for office, or maybe you did and I don't know it?
You know what?
I'm sure I'm not the only one who has asked you that.
Mayor Daley got up when he dedicated the theater and said, you know, the next mayor of Chicago should be, and I was like, hell no.
Well, why? Why not? Because you are, so if your mission is to make a difference,
mm-hmm.
and you are doing that arguably, and I want to talk more specifically about how, on stage, well, why personally would you think, okay, I could make a difference in another way here?
I don't want that battle. I'm an artist.
Mm-hmm.
I think that lane is not my lane. I don't want to. The thing that you have to go through in order to be a politician, you know, in order to be an actor, you have to face rejection. There's so many things that you have to do. I'd rather stay in the lane that I know best. And the lane that I know best.
I'd say the two lanes are kind of comparable in some ways.
Yes, they are. But I like this lane better than the political lane. So, no, sir. I will not run.
You had my vote. You know that. And because we are in Chicago, you had three or four votes from me and my dogs and my cat. And now, at some point in time in recent memory, you decided, okay, we're going to change up what we're going to do. We're going to honor legendary artists. And I've seen some of those shows. I'm not old enough to have seen Otis Redding. But now I kind of have. But other artists as well. Mm-hmm. And you've chosen a wide variety of artists, mostly from a certain era. So they're not, it's not Beyonce, you know. I mean, we're going back in time a little bit. I saw the one with Dionne Warwick. And then I went to the benefit where the real Dionne Warwick was mm-hmm. there performing mm-hmm. for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose to go that way first off?
Mm-hmm.
And then how did you choose the artist that you did choose?
Well, with our mission being to eradicate racism, we had to bring other races into the theater. Talking to the choir is one thing, but you have to talk to the whole audience. And we needed to reach a vast and diverse audience. And we tried everything. I starred as Blanche DuBois in A Streetcar Named Desire. We did the classics. We did.
I could see you as that.
Well, oh, yes.
Yes, I was a marvelous Blanche. But, and we tried everything, but the audience did not remain diverse until we produced a musical, the Muddy Waters Story, the Hoochie Coochie Man. And we thought that the blues, because the blues had already transcended cultures. And when you went to the blues clubs, you saw all kind of people. So it just made sense. So I said, okay, Jimmy Tillman, who at that time was the musical director of the Black Ensemble Theater, he was the one who originally brought the idea of Muddy Waters to me. And it just made sense. So
was that the first one?
The first musical?
They're really, well, there's more than musicals. They're like biopics, you
right.
know?
That was the first biopic, we'll
so,
call it.
So what I mm-hmm. thought you were going to say is, okay, this way, the diverse group of people, yes, could relate to the struggles that these real people, they know these people or feel, they know Muddy Waters or may mm-hmm. know something of the story, but now they're going to hear the whole story.
It's more of a humanistic approach than that. People always say, how do you get such a diverse audience? Because, I mean, now we're just known for our diversity. You can walk into our theater and you'll see blacks, whites, Chinese, Spanish, Latin, you'll see everybody. And the reason for that is we go past the specifics and we touch on the humanistic aspects of who we all are, so that no matter what color you are, you're going to see yourself up on that stage. You're going to be touched. You're going to say, oh, I can relate to that because I went through that kind of struggle. Mm-hmm. Because it's a humanistic quality. And so it brings people of all kinds together.
Well, I have one more thing to add to that. The shows are good.
Great.
Well, really, yeah. I mean, you know, you're also providing extraordinary theater. So who are some of the people? Rattle off some names.
That we have done?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. We've done, and Daryl, you're going to help me with this. We've done Brooke Benton. We've done Nina Simone. We've done Jackie Wilson. We've done
Marvin Gaye.
Marvin Gaye. We've done Teddy Pendergrass. We've done Dionne Warwick. We've done the blues singer Etta James. We've done Coco Taylor. We've done
Howlin' Wolf.
Howlin' Wolf.
I'm just going to throw in everyone.
Okay, thank you. Chuck Berry is running right now. We just did Sammy Davis Jr.
I felt horrible because I was traveling so much during that time, and I wanted to see Sammy Davis Jr. So part of it also is that for some of the names you rattle off, I'm not ever going to see Sammy Davis Jr., obviously. And actually, I did. I did. Because his last tour, the last time Sinatra came to Chicago. So he came to Chicago a couple of different times toward the end of his career with the Rat Pack.
Mm-hmm.
And once it was for the opening of the Chicago Theater.
88.
Mm-hmm. Was that then?
Mm-hmm.
I covered entertainment back then.
Wow.
Actually, for the Tribune. So I covered it, and it was amazing. You know, the Chicago Theater then, still a beautiful place, but
right.
I mean, then it looked great, you know. They had spent all that money, and to see Sinatra sing Chicago and to see Sinatra. You know, I mean, it was amazing because you could be in the back row of that theater and he was singing. He was still a saloon singer, you know, somehow he was singing to you, even if you were in the back row of the theater. Never anyone like him. But Sammy Davis was there. Mm-hmm. I think, though, maybe Dean Martin wasn't there. Somebody wasn't there. Maybe they all were the last time they came in. But it was kind of sad because you knew this was going to be the last time. You know?
They knew it, though. They knew it. You know, the way that it all came down is everybody had come into some financial trouble, and Frank was like, let's go back on the road, you know.
Is that why they went
he
back
retired.
On the road?
Yeah, well, you know, Frank retired. If you remember,
I remember
Frank,
that. And then
Frank
he did
retired.
Madison Square Garden.
Yep, and then he decided, you know what, Sammy was going through some financial troubles, and Dean was just Dean Martin at that point in time, and he said, hey, let's get everybody together for one last big hurrah. And it was huge. It was like multi-city. And then, unfortunately, Dean's son died.
Yes. Yeah.
And so at that point in time, that's how they picked up Liz Minnelli at that point in time. But yeah, so Dean left at that point in time. That was the thing. It was to make their final mark. You know, I mean, that's why I can't speak for them. But I mean, from what I've read and researched, and it was kind of like, you know, we're going to do what we can, and there it is. And then, you know, unfortunately, you know, Sammy was diagnosed with cancer, you know, while they were on the tour. And
so do you have to research the stuff, you know? And
oh, yeah.
and research some more and talk to whoever
some of them are still alive. So you apparently knew and know Dionne Warwick. So that's a little different.
Yes.
But it's hard to reach out to Sammy Davis Jr. He's not here anymore.
Yeah.
Or Brooke Benton or some of the other names you mentioned.
Their estate is here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And sometimes
they want to help you.
Sometimes.
And sometimes not. So
and
do you
sometimes
have to,
not.
So do you have to get permission to do this?
You can do a story about anybody.
That's what I would thought.
You can do a story about anybody.
But I would assume the estate wants it to be right. So are
sometimes.
They don't care sometimes.
And sometimes they don't give a damn.
Give me the worst story.
I can't.
Oh, darn it.
I shall not incriminate myself.
give me the best story.
The best story was Dionne Warwick.
Because it seems you're friends.
Oh, we are. We're very good friends.
How did you come to be friends?
Well, I wanted to write her story, so I followed her around the country.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. Every
How
place.
How long ago was this?
Oh, my God. I don't know. It was a while ago now, maybe about 10, 12 years. But every place that she was, I got her schedule, and I just booked every place that she was, and I left a little note. The last place where she finally said...
So at what point, right, at what point doesn't she call the police and say, this woman is...
No, I had finally written the script. And I left the script with about five people. And I said, could you make sure Dion gets this? Could you make sure Dion gets this? And I get this call in my hotel room. Miss Taylor, this is Dion Warwick. I have all five of your scripts. I said, can we talk? She said, most certainly so. Let's talk. And that was the beginning of our friendship.
What's she like?
She's a beautiful person. Yes. She actually was the designer for our new theater. She was actually the interior designer.
Really?
For the Black Ensemble Theater Cultural
Center. I think you said that at the benefit, and I'm thinking... Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe she had a little input here and there, but really...
No, no. She is an interior designer.
I had no idea.
Yes. And she's marvelous. She's marvelous. But she's Dionne Warwick.
Yes.
You know, like any star on that level, they all have a thing that you have to respect. But at the same time, she's a beautiful person.
Well, you know... The other nice thing about you doing these stories is I worry that we're going to forget some of these people. Now, Dionne Warwick is still around and performing, but even then, I'm not sure the people Dionne has said. Why do people in their 20s even know what a Dionne is? And why would they care, you know, or something to that effect?
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you mentioned some other names of people that are gone. I don't know how well they will be remembered, yet their contribution. Marvin Gaye. Mm-hmm. There you go. Marvin Gaye had one of the most beautiful angelic voices ever.
Yes.
Hit song after hit song in the mid-60s mm-hmm. and went way, way, way too early, right? Mm-hmm. Do people your age, Daryl, I'm looking at you, or younger, know who Marvin Gaye is or maybe know anything about him?
You know, actually, Marvin Gaye is kind of – they do. Marvin Gaye is somebody that's kind of different, because one big thing is, I mean, places like the Black Ensemble will never let them die. That's the first thing.
Well,
the
that's second, what I'm saying.
Right,
yeah,
but the second thing also is there's nothing new in this music nowadays. So they're sampling, you know, all the old stuff and making, you know, and so, you know, kids are actually hearing Marvin Gaye in some of the music that they have. And or some of these older, I mean, you know, some of these other artists that aren't with us anymore. So they're hearing it whether they want to or not.
But
and
I
it's like, oh, that's
know,
great, that's great. And
you
so
know, I beg to differ with you in a way. I mean, if we walked down the street and went to a high school, any high school,
mm-hmm.
I don't care what race the kids are, one way or the other. And you said, do you know, pick a Marvin Gaye song, you know, do you know? It's like, no. Have you ever heard of a Marvin Gaye?
Yeah.
I would think they'd say no.
Like I was saying, though, Marvin Gaye is kind of, you know,
iconic.
Yeah, iconic to the point where, yeah, they would know Marvin Gaye.
Yeah,
now, if somebody now somebody like
Brooke Benton, they wouldn't know
Brooke Benton. They would not know Brooke Benton. So I mean, you know, but it they're legends, so they'll never die. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're just sitting here talking about Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think YouTube helps.
Yeah.
But I think that's – so we were talking about why you do those shows. I think you provide an enormous service.
Oh, yes.
To young people. People who are maybe old enough to remember, which of course would not be me, but it's not that funny. But in addition to that, to very young people to say, okay, this is where it all started. It mm-hmm. does matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, we got to understand history. Our history is vital. Mm-hmm. It's vital because if we don't know our history, if we don't know where we've come from, we cannot plan where we are going.
Yes.
Well put. Daryl, what's your story?
Uh-oh. What's my story? My story, I'm originally from Virginia. Moved, went to college, then got a national tour, and it actually went to Skokie. Decided, fell in love
with... Well, that's exactly where you want a national tour to land. Skokie?
Yes.
What, tour of what?
It was a daytime show called Buffalo Soldiers, about the, you know, Buffalo Soldiers of the Civil War.
Okay.
So then we would come into the city all the time, Chicago, and I fell in love with the city. So after tour was over, I moved to Chicago, and that was 1999. And so, looking around, trying to find work and a job, I said, and wanting to work in theater, and I wanted to work in African American theater, and found a black ensemble, called the black ensemble, didn't realize I was talking to Jackie Taylor or who Jackie Taylor was at the point in time. So, yeah, come in and volunteer. At that time, we were running the Jackie Wilson story. I think, yeah, this is 2000 by this point.
So there's another one.
Yes.
You say higher and higher.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, kids won't know.
Yeah.
But then, and people my age might say Rita Coolidge.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I'm serious. She did the cover of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm serious. They may not know.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important, I think, that you do this.
Yes.
But
yes.
I interrupted. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. And so I came and I volunteer ushered on a Sunday show. And after the show was over, Jackie Taylor came to me and said, "Hey, do you have a day job?" I said, "No." She said, "I need somebody in the box office. You want to come work in the box office?" And here I am 19 years later.
Associate director.
Yes. Associate director.
And the backbone, she says.
That's right.
How many careers have you had a part in, do you think, Jackie?
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness. Thousands. Thousands.
So
you know, I'm an educator, so I was in the public school system for a thousand years.
So if you have a legacy, would it be the Black Ensemble Theater or all of these people whose lives you have touched in a significant way?
I think it would be both. You know,
I know it's an unfair choice.
Yeah, I couldn't say which one because it's through the Black Ensemble that I am able to transform and change. And then it's outside of the Black Ensemble because I've been blessed enough to have so many careers that I've been able to touch young people and to transform young people. And I think that's my purpose of even being in the world is to transform and to do whatever I can to ensure that by the time I leave, the world is a better place.
Do you look at some people who don't care about any of what you just said? They don't contribute in any way whatsoever. Maybe they make a living. Maybe they're criminals altogether. Maybe they spend their whole life in jail, whatever. But they're not making a contribution. If more people did make a contribution, would we have a better world? And does it frustrate you when you meet those people?
No, it does not frustrate me because I do not believe in frustration. Frustration creates anxiety. Anxiety creates fear, and you cannot move forward in fear, anxiety, or frustration. So when frustration actually creeps in, I just stop. Let it move through me. I don't make any decisions, any choices. I just stop and just say, okay, well, I'm feeling this emotion right now, so I'm going to just wait a second. It doesn't frustrate me because it's so many others who do care. It's so many others who do contribute. And why focus on the negative? You have to focus on the positive and pray for those who will never get it.
Daryl,
mm-hmm.
First off, if you were a book publisher, and you're not.
No, thank goodness.
But is there a book to write from this woman here, just listening to her?
Oh, all the time. I mean, yes, and it would take you through so many emotions. It would be funny. It would be sad. It would be happy. I mean, it would be a number one bestseller. I mean, it really will be, I guess.
Is there a book I don't know about?
No!
There should be.
Thank God!
No, there should be.
Not yet. Not yet. We call her, Superwoman. So we really do believe that one day she's going to wake up and say, hey, I think I'm going to write a book.
Next thing you know, someone can write it about her.
Yeah, that's true too. I think knowing Jackie Taylor, she's like, they're not going to write it right. I'll write it myself.
Well, you have made such a difference. And as I said at the very beginning, Jackie, I mean, not only for Chicago theater, but for theater around the country, how many other theaters are there like Black Ensemble Theater?
There are several.
Mm-hmm.
Several.
And how many were there 15 years ago?
Oh, there were more.
Really?
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. When I first started Black Ensemble Theater, it was about 20 black theaters in the city of Chicago.
With the same mission?
No. The Black Ensemble Theater is the only theater in the country with that mission.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, we have a great history of black theater, of African-American theater, past and present.
Yeah. But what I like to see, and I'm seeing it more and more, is going to a random production of whatever it is, anywhere, New York, in Chicago, big show. And race doesn't matter as to who's on stage playing a particular role. It just doesn't matter. And perhaps at times it shouldn't matter. So, and you've changed everything, Jackie. Thank you so much. You could tell I am a fan. I'm gushing just a little bit. But you deserve it. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.